My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. Tonight, it was Ronald's turn to pick, and he selected the 1995, I think, film Congo. So, Ronald, what drew you to this film?
I'd seen it when I was a kid, and I kind of remembered being scared of the apes. And I recently read about half the book. And so I was just interested to check out the movie, because I knew it kind of had a bad reputation, and I just wasn't sure why. I didn't remember it very well, and so I was kind of excited to try this one out.
Do you know why it has a bad reputation now?
I do. Yeah. I definitely do.
Okay, let's go ahead around, and would you recommend this? I will start. I actually had a very good time with this movie. I watched it. I was kind of low-key obsessed with it when I was growing up for reasons I can't really explain. There's not that much in it that I think a kid, like a six-year-old, would really love. I guess maybe the gorillas. I don't know. But watching it this time, there's a lot of very pretty on-location shooting in Africa. The special effects, I mean, they're practical mostly, and they're either good or they do a good job of hiding that they're bad. I can't tell which. And there's a couple of really fun performances in it, even if they aren't, like, good. So it's dumb as fuck, but it's affable. And definitely, if you want, like, a pure slice of 90s cheese, this is a place you would want to go. Ronald, what do you think?
I actually really liked this one, too. It wasn't good. So let me put it this way. It's like the writing is really terrible and the characters are all really annoying, but I still had a really good time with it. It's like one of those movies that, like, you can tell it's kind of bad, but it's still interesting. So it's worth your time. And it also just, like, does crazy stuff. Like, there's gorillas and there's lasers and a volcano. And, like, there's, like, some pretty ambitious stunts, and they do a lot of jungle scenery, which is pretty cool. So I don't know. I had a good time with this movie, even though it was kind of stupid. It was like a really fun stupid and not like a really boring stupid. And that's the kind of movie I look out for. So this is a recommend for me.
And Rahul, what do you think?
So I would recommend it, but I would say that the movie weakened considerably towards the end. So yeah, I think it was a fun movie. I enjoyed the whole thing, but I think it started out really well and sort of petered out, which seems to happen to a lot of movies. That's my only feedback on it. I really liked, for some reason, I thought the apes were really well done. Maybe I don't know any. I mean, gorillas. Maybe I don't know.
No, they were amazing. Gorillas, so they were amazing.
The suits, aside from
well done.
Yeah, and except for seeing them from the back, for some reason in the back they had enormous, like, dump truck asses, which I don't think gorillas actually have. But from every other angle, they looked really, really good.
Silverbacks do. I don't know about normal gorillas, though.
Clearly you haven't really been looking at many gorillas lately, Lawrence, with a boner.
Been slacking.
I'm sorry, guys. I'll try to broaden my masturbatory horizons.
That firefighter gorilla calendar I got you, that's not... Oh, you're
sexy firefighter gorilla. We got to stress, not well,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, it's the firefighter calendar.
Yeah, we're not putting them in danger.
it's just gorillas and like the zoo's on fire. Like firefighters are going in to save them.
For some reason, all the firefighters are gone, so they're just like, "Fuck it, we got to give the hoses to the gorillas and pray." This is our last line of defense, boys. Fuck. So let's go ahead and roll for the summary. I can't share my screen, so you guys are gonna have to trust me. But it's gonna be Lawrence 1-2, Rahul 3-4, or sorry, Ronald 3-4 and Rahul 5-6. And here we go.
Alright.
Shit, it's me again. Okay. Right. So we start.
Wait, let me get out the timer.
Oh yeah, fair enough. And I checked the tape. I believe I should have 3 minutes because we're doing 1 minute for every 30 minutes of the thing.
Are we doing 1 minute for?
I think so because we were talking about doing 30 seconds, but then people kept fucking it up. And then I listened to the original. I think it was literally 1 minute per.
Okay, let's do 1 minute per. So three. Yeah. So you want 3 minutes?
Yeah.
All right, 3 minutes on the clock. You ready?
Yeah. Oh, wait, let me make sure I got my notes. One sec.
Oh, dude, you can't use notes. That's cheating.
Wait, really?
I don't know. Do whatever you want. I don't care. All right, ready? Three, okay. Two. Oh, wait, you're not ready?
Nah, hit me.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
So we open on a young Bruce Campbell who's going through the African desert, or sorry, African jungle. We don't know why. He sets up some equipment and he gets a satellite link back to Houston. And he's talking to Joe Don Baker and Laura Linney. And he's like, hey, I found these cool diamonds that I could use them to power this laser. And Laura Linney's like, that's so cool. He's like, go get Joe Don Baker. I want to show him this cool laser. And Laura Linney's like, okay, 1 hour. And then Bruce Campbell goes off and he swims and finds a lost city and his buddy's hanging out. And then his buddy goes away and he's like, where's my buddy? And then suddenly someone throws an eyeball at him and he's like, wait, that's weird. And then we cut back to Houston and they're showing the satellite uplink in an hour. And wouldn't you know it, everyone's dead. So Joe Don Baker's like, Laura Linney, I need you to go get these diamonds. And Laura Linney's like, oh, no, I want to go get Bruce Campbell back. He was hot and I was going to marry him. And Joe Don Baker's like, no, diamonds. And they argue for a little bit. But then Joe Don Baker clearly lies to her and is like, no, I want the diamonds. It's fine. So they go to, she goes, and, or next we cut to a talking gorilla. And she knows sign language, but she also has a backpack to let her talk. Her name's Amy. A human taught her to talk. And the human decides for basically no reason, real reason, that he's going to take her back to Africa. He finds a shady Romanian named, played by Tim Curry, to take him back to Africa. But they're about to get on the plane. He's out of money. It turns out the Romanian has no money. They can't fuel the plane. So Laura Linney shows up and she's like, I have money. Let's go to fucking Africa. And the guy's like, I don't want to, but it's not really clear why. But then he eventually says, yes, they go to Africa. They meet Joey Pags and Eddie. Fuck. God damn it. I'm embarrassed that I don't know this. You know what? I'm Googling this. Ghostbusters. No, God damn it. It showed me 2016. Fuck. This is so far off the road. Ernie Hudson. And he's playing a great white hunter, except as he notes, he's black. And they have a bunch of jungle adventures and they eventually find the lost city of Zinj, which is full of diamonds. The diamonds can power lasers. And turns out the city's full of asshole gorillas that they bred to guard the city. And they hang out for one night and it kind of seems like they're just owning the gorillas. But for some reason, they're like, we got to leave. So they run away from the gorillas. They end up next to a volcano. Laura, the gorillas are killing everyone, even though they have guns, because there's just so many gorillas, guys. And eventually Laura Linney grabs a diamond and pops it into this man portable laser that she has for telecommunication purposes and uses it to kill all the gorillas. But then a volcano explodes. So the survivors have to escape in a balloon, except for Amy, the talking gorilla, who hangs out with other gorillas and I think gets stooped by a silverback. And Laura Linney finally realizes what everyone knows, which is that Joe Don Baker only cared about diamonds and didn't give a fuck about Bruce Campbell. So she uses her laser, which is apparently powerful enough that it can destroy a satellite in orbit, to destroy his communication satellite. And then she throws the diamond away. And that's the end. And I'm so glad I had 3 minutes, because forgetting Ernie Hudson's name.
Wow, that was embarrassing.
Yeah, I was very close to saying the black Ghostbuster and revealing my racism.
I don't think that's racist. He is the black Ghostbuster.
Racist, dude. Calling out his skin color. Yeah, they're all black.
Mentioning that race exists.
What the fuck, yeah, man?
You serious, bro? You can't say that.
I mean, to be fair, that is very much how the movie Ghostbusters thinks about him. But I try to be better than the movie Ghostbusters in my treatment of Ernie Hudson.
I mean, Ernie Hudson is well beyond.
You only think of him as a black Ghostbuster. Like, yeah. He's just a Ghostbuster.
He's in so many good movies, but like, so he's well beyond just being the black Ghostbuster. That being said, he is the black Ghostbuster. Yeah. So, he kind of owns
Rahul's
that.
Rahul's also a racist, confirmed.
Rahul is the only one who's pure.
I didn't even notice.
You didn't even know who he was.
Yeah, you've never even seen Ghostbusters. So you can't be racist. Anyways, let's get to some high points. And I want to start with just Joe Don Baker gives this performance in this movie where he's only in it for 5 minutes. And he spends probably 3 minutes of that screaming at people about how he wants diamonds. And that's just good, clean fun. He loves diamonds. He wants diamonds. And fuck you for interfering with his ability to get diamonds.
I mean, like, Jodan Baker's such a weird character because he's like, yeah, he's barely there. And they have to get across to the viewer that he is a greedy CEO or whatever. And so basically he witnesses like the carnage of a bunch of dead employees that he knew personally.
And his son. His son. Missing.
Yeah, his son was on this expedition where he sees like all these like mangled people. And his immediate thoughts are like, we need to get this diamond. Like, he has no reaction to it. It is a wild ride. Let me just put it that way. I appreciate the earnestness of the movie of just being like, this guy sucks. Like, you can see it. Everyone knows it. Move past it, bozos.
Yeah. And to the point where, like, I think one of the few times he doesn't shout about diamonds is when, like, Laura Linney's like, hey, you're just funding this expedition for diamonds, aren't you? You don't care about your son. And he's like, no. And it's almost
question
like
it mark?
Causes, yeah. It's almost like it causes him physical pain to, like, besmirch his beloved diamonds by saying he cares about anything else.
Yeah. It's a pretty weird plan because he's just like, it's something about like the satellite is bringing him money now, but that's not going to last. So he needs these diamonds, which will be able to shoot lasers into space.
Or is that what he's doing with the diamonds? I know he wants the diamonds for the laser, and yeah, he's in a telecommunications. Like
telecommunication gear.
But so it explains it better in the book, but basically the idea is that like the transmission of information, the next step is going to be lasers. And to get a concentrated enough laser to be able to communicate to satellites, they need this special diamond that has a specific crystalline lattice or whatever.
Did they explain in the book why this they somehow have enough power on this thing to destroy a satellite in orbit and cut through a gorilla and all this shit?
On you know,
a thing that
I
a
didn't,
person
I,
can carry?
I didn't get that far, but I don't know. Probably Michael Crichton is usually like a lot more in depth on his explanations than the movies that are based on his books are. So he probably has something, but you know.
So I don't know if you guys remember, I was 6 in 1995. I remember the commercials for this. You guys are probably too young, but when this movie came out, it said sponsored by Duracell. So there might be a connection there.
Oh, yeah, dude. It just keeps going and going. Did it actually?
That's energizing.
Do you actually remember that it was sponsored by Duracell?
No.
No.
It was.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It was sponsored by Taco Bell. That's where we got volcano sauce. And also why there's that scene where they're panning over all of the food and it's very conspicuously Taco Bell.
Wait, what scene was that?
It's like at the start with, I think when they're in the control room or something, they're just panning over like all this like food wrappers and shit. Stuff. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. It really made me want Taco Bell.
Yeah. It's a shame they discontinued the volcano sauce or just relabeled it.
Was it just
fire.
A different? Yeah, just relabeled it, right? Like it's probably it still
seems
there.
To be the same.
Yeah.
Okay, but real quick though, real quick aside, what's your guys' favorite Taco Bell hot sauce?
I mean,
is it the fire?
I go with the Diablo. It's not appreciably hotter, but it's a little bit less sort of vinegary and acidic than the fire is to me.
It's a lot smokier.
Yeah, I think it's just a good all-around hot. Or I wouldn't use it as a hot sauce exactly because it's not that hot, but it's a very good all-around sauce. Rahul?
How about you, Rahul? What do
I
you
don't mean? Remember. I haven't been to Taco Bell since the last one with Ronald, so that's probably...
Dude, that was like 10 years ago.
Jesus Christ.
No, go to Taco Bell on my own, man. Like, that's scary. Like, I'm not going to walk into
good.
Taco Bell, like, just
so good.
Myself.
Just go through the drive-thru.
You can literally order it through the app, and then like all you have to do is say your name at the drive-thru.
Yeah, I don't want people to have my name.
We could give them a fake name
out there.
The last time I tried to order Taco Bell, I was ordering it through Grubhub, and I submitted an order of such complexity that Taco Bell was just like, "Nah, we're not doing that," and declined.
What? What did you order?
Well, I ordered a taco party pack because I order one of those 12 packs of tacos whenever I'm feeling sick so I can just nosh on that all day and not worry. Mm. And I told them to half of them sub the meat for potatoes and half of them sub the meat for beans. And then I told them to add rice to one half and the red sauce to the other half. And
you're turning into like a math problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right? You don't like to turn it down.
Yeah. Lesson learned. Do not order that. Because like you can order the most complicated stuff if you go in, because they have like the machine where you can order it through, and you can make like super custom orders on it. But I don't know about like a 12 pack dividing it up like that. That seems really that seems like they would just be like, screw this.
How do you slice and dice this, you know?
Like, if you ordered them individually, I don't think they'd give a shit.
I did not blame them at all for turning it down. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
Anyways, anyone else? Ronald, what's your favorite Taco Bell hot sauce, though?
You know what? I like the regular hot sauce. I don't really find a difference in heat between hot and fire and volcano. So I like them all, but I generally go with just the regular hot sauce. It's a staple. It's a classic.
Yeah. Anyway, I have another high point, but let's hear from you guys, maybe.
Hit us with another high point.
Okay, so Tim Curry. I have a high point, if you hit me. Hit
okay,
me.
Okay. There was, I thought, a really great moment that was wasted. So as usual for me, it's like a combination high point, low point. Mostly a high point. They have these like, okay, so they're chased. Let's see, the second expedition goes to the jungle. They're looking for all the dead people. And they're all missing. They're like, where are the bodies? And it's like cool and creepy. And then they like find this temple like super easily. They find the temple and they get chased back or something. Like a bunch of them die. And they set this perimeter with these like automatic turrets. And they're like, what? They're shooting, but where are the bodies? I thought that was really cool. It ended up being totally irrelevant. But it kind of gave the evil... You didn't exactly know what it was at that point. It kind of gave like the monsters like a
little bit of mystique.
Mystery to them that I liked. It again, it did nothing with that, but yeah.
Feel like they set up the gorillas really well. Like the evil gorillas, they were really scary, or like the idea of them was really scary going into it. But then like once the full reveal happens, you're like, oh, these are just kind of sickly looking gorillas.
Yeah. Sickly, right? Suicidal.
They're slightly gorillas. Smarter than a regular gorilla. I will, you know.
They're definitely look like creepy and bad, but they're not like physically imposing, really.
They look like they have liver cancer.
Yeah. Like, I mean, definitely if you were going to like, you know, try to find a gorilla to take on a date or something, you would not pick these gorillas. You'd be like, that looks like a weirdo gorilla. But no. Why did I go there?
It looks like
the gorilla based on the conversation, not its external appearance, because I don't care about the soul.
Okay, so take it from the novel. These gorillas actually do have a language that Amy learns, but apparently most of the words are just variants of kill.
I respect their style. You know, it doesn't really make sense how these guys are still alive, because they talked about how like, they're like, oh, they've only been designed to protect this place from outsiders. But it's like, how would they reproduce and like forage and get enough food and water?
Leaves.
All right, try this on for size, though. In the book, at least, these are like a gorilla chimpanzee human hybrid. And these ones look inbred as hell. You know?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I can understand how gorillas would live. But if these guys were really like, you know, whatever, selected for hyper violence, and you know, they have all these traits just to protect this one area, it does not seem like they would live without supervision.
The other concern I have is how did this gorillas appear to just attack anyone who comes near, which raises a lot of questions about how living in that city could ever have worked.
Yeah. And they said that the gorillas must have killed the masters, so I guess it didn't work ultimately.
It was a Planet of the Apes type situation.
Yeah, I don't know how it would ever get to that point. You wouldn't just breed a billion of them, you know, like each batch. You'd breed a few, and then when those few didn't work out, it wouldn't. I don't think it would just turn into an immediate rebellion, but, you know, maybe the book explains it better.
I feel like there's probably better ways to protect your city than to custom breed gorillas.
Yeah, I mean,
could just be me.
Call back to episode 2 of our podcast, but how is this easier than just using people?
Just like hire some guys.
Yeah, you got a bunch of diamonds. Whatever. Like
they'd be rich as hell. Why would they custom breed the gorillas? just seems way more complicated, way less efficient. You can't give them weapons and stuff.
Well, in the book, they do have weapons, actually.
They use clubs, but they don't use, like, guns. Well, this was Bravi gun, but they don't use bows.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
but you or slingings?
How well would a bow work in the jungle?
Great. They work flawlessly.
I would imagine they don't work well at all unless you clear out the area. So maybe a gorilla has an agility advantage.
Why would you imagine that?
Have you ever been in the jungle? It's like so thick with
constantly
trees.
Yeah, I live in the jungle, dude.
Yeah. Have you ever heard that song, Welcome to the Jungle? It's called the Urban Jungle, and I'm always there. The mean streets of a very nice area of Albuquerque.
Dude, I mean, I feel like ranged weapons work in basically every environment.
No,
you don't have to snipe somebody from 100 yards out for them to be effective.
Yeah.
Dude, you know, you probably wouldn't use a longbow.
In a jungle, you can't turn, like, I don't see a bow being that effective in a jungle.
Okay, anyways. I want to talk about something else now.
No, okay. No, we're going to argue.
No, let's continue on the bow thing.
Like,
you know, viewers, write in what you think.
I wouldn't use a bow. I would just use a laser or something.
I would shoot you dead with my bow. And then
before you could even find the diamond.
You wouldn't even be able to fucking turn around and draw your bow. Like,
with your dying breath.
I would snipe you from orbit, bro.
With your dying breath, you would admit that I was right.
I would aim my satellite at the smelliest spot in the jungle and take you out, bro.
Hey, so how is the argument what's better, a bow and arrow or an orbital satellite with a laser?
I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
Are you in Houston in this scenario and I'm in the jungle for some reason?
Because, I mean, at that point, even if Ronald had a gun or whatever you think, even if Ronald was a gorilla, which I think was the thing we were originally arguing about, he's not going to make it to Houston before you kill him with the fucking hammer at dawn or whatever the fuck you have.
Anyway.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so I want to talk about Tim Curry in this.
Yeah.
So Tim Curry gives what I would describe as an enthusiastic performance. He's a Romanian con man named Hercula Hermolca. I was for years convinced that he was a fake Romanian because I had a false memory of him pronouncing Ceaușescu, which is not how a Romanian would ever say that word. But having rewatched the movie, nope, he is actually Romanian in this. His accent isn't that good, but he did at least learn how to pronounce Ceaușescu, so that's great. And every single scene of him, he's just mugging for the camera and just like pulling weird faces and talking in this insane fake Eastern European accent. And it's incredibly fun. And there are two highlights. The first, for some reason, the expedition has been pulled into the office of like some general. There's like nebulous, very poorly defined unrest in the African country where they are. So they've been pulled into this like hotel lobby and the general's like, hey, why should I let you go? You know, and he's basically just trying to get them to bribe him. And while all that's going on, he's invited them to eat cake and tea. And Tim Curry spends the entire scene holding a piece of cake and looking around like very suspiciously, like trying to figure out if he's allowed to eat the cake or not. And then when he finally like decides to take a bite of it, it turns out he wasn't allowed to take the bite. So the general, who I think is played by Delroy Lindo, says in this very broad generic African accent, Mr. Hermolca, stop eating my sesame cake. At which point Tim Curry has to sheepishly spit it out. And it's the single funniest thing in the movie, and I loved it so much.
Well, let's talk about another highlight.
Yeah, fair enough.
Ernie Hudson in this movie is fucking great. Yeah. He is just fucking styling, like, easily the best character. You know, or maybe Tim Curry because he's hilarious, but Ernie Hudson is just like, he's an injection of fun into this movie, and without him, I don't think this movie would work nearly as well.
He's like unflappable. He's constantly wisecracking. He knows how to get out of any situation. Apparently, he's just great fun.
He's like the Indiana Jones of this movie.
He's got like big outlaw energy. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and he's talking in this very weird accent. I don't think it's a good accent necessarily, but it's fun to hear Ernie Hudson talk like that.
Yep. Yeah, he's really good in this. He's like him and Tim Curry. I mean, Tim Curry's kind of like ironically good because it's Tim Curry, and you know, he's hilarious and he's doing this really terrible accent. But like Ernie Hudson is like, his character is like the injection of goodness into this movie that like really keeps it all alive, because a lot of the characters are really terrible and boring. And as much as I love Laura Linney, like they didn't give her much to work with.
She's a take no prisoners woman who also maybe wants to fuck the primatologist. But curiously, they never actually like closed the book on that.
They don't really explore it very much.
Yeah, it seems like it should happen, but then you think about why you think it should happen, and it kind of seems like it's just he's the male lead and she's the female lead, so you expect him to hook up, and then you're like, wait, is that, you know?
Yeah.
And a couple don't really have time in this movie. I think it was better without any.
Oh, I agree that it didn't need to happen, but like they kind of hint at it a couple of times.
Yeah, I mean, she sort of flirts. She's a little flirty with him.
Yeah, and I mean, he flirts back, but.
Yeah. But he's mostly committed to Amy.
It's ultimately pointless. Yeah. He's fucking a gorilla, dude.
He's a gorilla man, you know?
Yeah, right. He likes the dump truck asses at the gorillas. Yeah.
Let's see. Another high point I have here is that this movie is, I mean, it's probably still racist, but it's significantly less racist than you'd expect from a jungle movie from the mid-90s. In particular, although a lot of the black characters are props, but they did actually switch the race on Ernie Hudson's character. In the book, he's a white guy who, you know, is just like the pretty standard issue great white hunter. And by switching him to an African dude, it like totally sort of changes the dynamic of the thing in a way that's interesting. And I can't like think of another movie from the 90s where it was based on a racist book and they like took a step that drastic to make it less racist. So good for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know how like that the politics get explored, because I didn't really get that far into the book.
But I was going on the TV tropes, and apparently at one point they encounter a native tribe who are cannibals and also throw their shit at them like monkeys.
Oh my god. Well, Michael Crichton, come on, dog.
I mean, he also wrote a book about how global warming is fake, and another one about how you can't trust Japanese.
Oh, Jesus. Well, yeah, I mean, let's be real. Like, some of this stuff is still a little bit problematic, but I do think that the movie comes at this with a love of Africa rather than, like, a disdain, which I would say that, like, a lot of movies from this time period kind of have. Like, even though it kind of shows two countries in turmoil, that's kind of standard, like, you know, I don't know that much about African politics, so, you know, it's not necessarily that I'm saying it's inaccurate. It's just that that's what they choose to portray. It's kind of a, you know, standard Hollywood stuff, which isn't that great, but like, yeah, the characters themselves are more complex than that. The African characters themselves are more complex than that, and yeah, especially Ernie Hudson is just like a really cool character and easily the most likable person in the movie, so definitely enjoyed that.
Yeah. Rahul, do you have a high point?
Let's see, I think I'm on to low points at this point.
I'll give a high point. I liked the part where Laura Linney cut through all of the evil gorillas with a laser.
Yeah, I don't understand how the fuck that laser worked at all, or why you could apparently power it with diamond dust, which is the thing that Bruce Campbell does at the start. But yeah, the climax of gorilla versus laser is very fun.
Fairly in the laser camp.
It feels like in the movie, the laser is powered by the diamond and not just focused.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense, right?
I mean, well, yeah, not physically, but.
It also doesn't really make sense for it to be focused by the diamonds. You can use a diamond for focusing a laser, but you need to, like, shape it and stuff first.
Right. Well, yeah.
It had to be an artist.
You can't just pop it in a laser.
Can't be a natural diamond.
To be fair, she banged off all the rocks.
Yeah, so it's fine.
She spit on it.
Spit shine!
She rubbed it against her vest for a good 30 seconds to give it the right shape. You know, like diamonds are one of the hardest substances on Earth or anything.
What else could you possibly want?
Anyways, yeah, let's get into some low points. And I guess I'll start with just, they never really explained what the fuck is up with the laser. And I kind of can suspend disbelief on it.
I mean, I don't think any explanation, like, it's better to just leave it, in my opinion, because any explanation is going to be stupid.
Look, here's the explanation.
Better not go into it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just,
Here's the explanation, Rahul. It's technology with a rare substance that equals crazy lasers. You know, that's how people thought about stuff back in the 90s. Nobody knew how anything worked. So,
yeah. You know what, Ronald? I think you got it.
I mean, watch the movie Avatar. You know, it's the same thing. Like, but oh, that's technology. Like the future. Yeah. Well, I don't know. This is maybe the future. Did they say the year?
Yeah. This is the laser timeline of the future.
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be a jump in technology.
Yeah. So, but yeah. I mean, obviously, whatever they are using as a power source for the laser is more worth more than anything that they could possibly do with the laser itself.
Well, maybe it just focuses the laser down so much that it just needs like no freaking watts, you know? Everything about that. Just like a single stream of photons.
I mean, the fact that we can see the laser with the naked eye like that.
I think that's just really, that's why
we can't go into the technicalities of it because it just, anything. I mean, it's kind of like a Star Wars fucking lightsaber, right? You just kind of like, that's the way it is. Like, that's just what it does.
It is essentially an infinitely long lightsaber.
That you can use to shoot satellites out of orbit.
Wait, how did she not? Okay.
No, that's how not... did, what?
I was going to say, how did she not kill her friends when she was lasing all the gorillas? With... I guess they're all
hit the rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, but it. Yeah. I guess the rocks.
She aimed downwards.
She made sure.
Yeah.
I mean, if any weapon's going to be accurate, it's a fucking laser.
I
literally shoots infinitely straight forever.
Yes.
That's true.
Well, I mean, it does. It'll get bent by gravity. We need to put that in the podcast notes.
Oh, dude. Gravitational lensing.
Yes. But I think that she made a huge mistake in throwing away the stone.
What the hell was that about?
I know. She should have like sold this technology to the highest military bidder.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
Or like she goes and finds the competitor to Travicom and sells them the diamond.
Baker. Yeah, instead she just doomed humanity to our time, which is Instagram and TikTok.
The non-diamond-based communications.
God damn it, Laura Linney. Fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, if nothing else, like 30 people died for that fucking diamond. Maybe, I don't know what you should do with it, but chucking it back into the jungle seems dumb.
Totally pointless.
That's another. So that kind of moves on to one of my lowlights, which is like Laura Linney's character makes no sense in this movie. Like they don't know what she is or what her motivations are.
Let me recap her character, and then you can explain.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
why she doesn't make sense. So she's ex CIA chick working at a telco, tapped to go into the jungle and find the missing team for this telco.
And also, she has a doctorate in communications technology, which makes me wonder why she was working for the CIA and not the NSA.
I love that the general, like, he pulls her file. Like,
the general who's interrogating them and demanding bribes and saying that Tim Curry is not allowed to have sesame cake also apparently has a computer with a list of everyone who was ever in the CIA. Which seems like he shouldn't have that.
That seems like a huge breach of classified information.
I mean, famously, the CIA will not confirm or deny that anyone was in the CIA.
Yeah, why would?
Yeah, that's how, for instance, Steven Seagal has been getting away with claiming for years that he was in the CIA.
That is genius.
Well, they're anti-side.
I have so much to learn from this man.
Yeah, I mean, say what you will about him and his sex trafficking and all the horrible stuff he's done. He is the only civilian to ever disarm a nuclear weapon.
So you could, so we could tell new college graduates, or I could have done this, that even if you don't have experience, you could just say you have 10 years of experience at the CIA.
Well, I mean, that won't work on a new college graduate because people will be like, wait, you joined the CIA when you were 12?
Yes, sir. I was born and bred.
Have you ever seen that movie Spy Kids? Yeah, that was a documentary about me in the CIA.
Have you seen that movie Agent Cody Banks? I'm essentially Frankie Muniz. So.
Yeah, they based it on me, actually, but obviously because it's the CIA, they couldn't say that it was based on me. And if you call them and ask them that and they laugh, that's them covering
it. That's basically a confirmation.
So if you don't work at the CIA, how do you get a job after? Because they'll just see this huge empty spot in your work history.
I think you're allowed to put it on your resume, but you have to be vague about it.
But then how, like, how would an employer, a prospective employer,
vet? Well, I think if you give them your supervisor's number or something, maybe. But the CIA is a general rule, like the whole organization. You know, I actually don't know that. We should check into it. Except I don't care enough.
It kind of sounds like something like once you're in the CIA, that's it. That's your career forever.
Yeah. Anyway,
you were saying before I interrupted you, something about Laura Linney not making sense.
Yeah, and how she, because she like doesn't take her top off or like have lesbian sex with anyone or any of the stuff we want her to do.
Would she have lesbian sex with Amy?
I mean, I would.
The only other female character in the movie is a gorilla. What the fuck, Lawrence?
I mean, you could introduce a new character for her to have sex with, like in the film Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, yeah, you could.
So you're saying that her character didn't make sense because they didn't introduce Charlize Theron for her to have sex with?
Well, actually, I think you'll find in that movie they introduced Sophia Batea for Charlize Theron to have sex with Ronald.
Okay.
And it's here spermazoid amateurism becomes apparent.
See, let me tell you this. It is Laura Linney is a great actor, and she does her best with this movie. Her character is given nothing to work with.
What are you talking about? She has that scene where she hangs out of the side of the plane and shoots down missiles with a flare gun. That's something to do, Ronald.
Stunt work, sure.
And she gets, like, I think probably 5 to 10 lines of dialogue on the airplane between the gorilla hijinks.
Yeah. I mean, she has dialogue and she's supposedly the main character, but we don't know. Like, we just don't get what she wants in this movie.
She wants to find out if her
ex.
Yeah, presumably, but we know that that's basically a doomed mission from the beginning. So it's like, what's her arc in the movie? She begins as a character who is proselytizing her boss for only caring about diamonds and not people. And she ends the movie proselytizing about how her boss only cares about diamonds. There's no development there.
She finds out that you shouldn't trust Joe Don Baker when he says he's not interested in diamonds. That's some character growth.
Yeah, but she also like basically knows that at the beginning because she seems to already be suspicious. So like, she basically spends the entire movie confirming something that she basically already knew. It's just like, what was the point of that? You know, it would make more sense if she started off as like kind of greedy, going only for the diamond. And the adventure was that along the way, she learned that like the diamonds weren't as important as the people she was there with. But that's not what happened in the movie at all. Like she was basically just a good person the whole time. She had no development and she had. So like, I don't know, like Laura Linney is just such a knockout actress. Would be perfect for some like character complexity, and they even comment a couple of times like, oh, you know, she's like a killer, she's a shark in the water or something like that when she's like trying to get on board the plane. But we just don't ever see that. We just never get the action for her to like, you know, kind of betray anyone. Or
I don't think she's ever even aggressive towards another human being.
Yeah, right. The only like kind of weird thing she does is blow up the satellite, and we're supposed to, as the audience, we're supposed to believe it, like that was a good thing of her to do.
Really,
I'm not against it, but go ahead.
You know what's really tragic about that satellite getting blown up?
What?
Like a day later, Travicom loses another satellite when the protagonist from Congo, Descent into Zinj, destroys another one. With another laser, amazingly.
So is that a second movie? Can you go into that one again?
It's a point and click adventure video game with actually some fairly impressive for the time FMV starring at least Joe Don Baker and I think Laura Linney, although they're not in it very much, where like you get sent as a member of another expedition to go try to find out what happened to the expedition, which means that I guess there's like a third expedition out there that's just one dude. And for some reason, when you go on this expedition, Joe Don Baker injects you with a suicide-like thing in your neck. And then at the very end, after you've escaped the gorillas, you have to use the laser to destroy the satellite that's going to send the signal that'll otherwise kill you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe he's on. Maybe that person is on the plane that crashed.
Maybe, but
because they like don't investigate at all. They're like, don't even look.
Yeah.
Like, was that part of it? They were like, this is the video game tie-in.
I guess it was kind of weird.
The game is probably as good as the movie.
It's like one of those. Well, it definitely, you spend a lot more time in the city of Zinj than you do in the movie. But it's one of those adventure games that is very mean, and your character dies a lot. And I remember that whenever you die, they show you the skull of one of the fucked up the gorillas, and it slowly turns towards you. And then there's this noise like, or so, like a very scary like growl that's still stuck in my head.
Oh,
so, anyways, there's a review of a video game I played a long time ago. Probably doesn't hold up, but it scared me when I was wee.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's probably no way to play it anymore.
Yeah.
Virtualize a Windows 2000.
Yeah. Compatibility mode. Anyways, I have another low point.
All right.
The structure on this movie is stupid. Like, the opening is pretty good. And then it loses steam where they just have a bunch of fairly repetitious jungle adventures. And then it picks up steam when they get to Zinj. But I think they get to Zinj with like 20 minutes left in the movie. And that's just not enough time.
Yeah. Conveniently, the volcano's exploding.
They spend a night in Zinj. I think in the novel, they spend a lot more time in Zinj being besieged by the gorillas and unable to escape. And that's a much better premise. So they need to cut about 20 minutes of like Africa adventures and spend 20 more minutes in Zinj with like trying to figure out what's up with the gorillas and how to escape and shit.
100% agree.
As it is, it kind of seems like they could have just escaped from Zinj like by walking away and it would have been fine.
Yeah, they didn't really seem.
I think they could have cut the whole talking gorilla everything and skipped all that. Honestly,
she matters more in the book, but yeah.
Yeah, she didn't do anything. But she's fought. Also like one of the most interesting characters, or one of the most interesting parts of the movie, because just the gorilla looked so good.
They did a great job with her suit, and the idea of that like backpack that can translate her sign language is a very like good innovation for this movie.
I also just like the extra stakes that she added to all of the adventures, because like there's always this element of like, how the hell are we going to transport a gorilla along with the people?
Yeah, and, like, I like that too.
There's a plane crashing. How are we going to get? Yeah, exactly. So I think that she added a lot to the movie in that sense, but she really had like nothing to do. I guess she kind of guided them to the place, but.
And then there's that scene at the very end where the gorillas are about to eat Elliot, the primatologist. So she shows up and she starts like freaking out and roaring at him and saying, go away. And for some reason, the gorillas, even though they outnumber her like conservatively 20-1, are cowed by this instead of just also eating her.
You really? Yeah,
I did not get that.
I really thought that there was going to be a gorilla fight in this movie. And for some reason, I remembered there being one and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, it would have been very cool if it did.
It felt like that was what it was building to.
What it was building to was she brings the normal gorillas in to like fight the other gorillas. It's like the last minute, the cavalry have arrived thing, especially since they found all those skulls indicating that the, you know, gray gorillas had been murdering gorillas for like hundreds of years. It seems like they'd want some payback, but no, that didn't happen. Instead, they just ran around for a little bit. She shouted at them and then Laura Linney pulled out a laser.
Yeah, pretty dumb.
I have another
low light. Oh, go ahead. You go first, Rahul.
I feel like Tim Curry's character, enjoyable as he was like so pointless. Like, he's like basically this Romanian con man, and he's able to finagle this expedition to the Congo based on some information he's discovered that proves that this gorilla knows where this temple is.
It doesn't, though. He discovers that the gorilla likes drawing circles, and he found a rig with a circle on it, and then he makes some wild leaps.
This is the eye. But anyway, when the plane he's contracted to fly off is like, okay, you didn't actually pay us for fuel, so we're unloading everybody. Like, why was he still involved after that? Like, I don't get it.
I presume he still paid for the rest of the flight.
He appears to have paid for like an airplane and then a guide that got fired. And then Laura Linney paid for everything else. So it is sort of like the guy who bought the pizza, one pizza for the party, and then will not leave. And he's like there 2 days later, and you're like, wait, why are you still sleeping on my couch? And he's like, yeah, remember exactly. That pizza?
I did that. I bought you the pizza.
Yeah, I think that definitely was what his character was doing, but it was like, maybe he's just likable enough that they're like, whatever.
I mean, as the audience, yes, I would love to hang out with Tim Curry. The other characters seem mostly annoyed by him.
Okay, I want to bring up another low light, just kind of riding off of this. A character that contributed so little to like our memory that we've barely mentioned him, Elliot. Like
the primatologist dude?
The primatologist guy. Theoretically, he's one of the two main characters along with Laura Linney, but he is just so annoying and so useless the entire movie. Like, I kind of keep forgetting he's in it.
Yeah, the only thing I really remember from him is the leech dick scene, where he wakes up with a leech on his dick, which, you know, embarrassing. And then he freaks out and goes running to Eddie, goddammit. Why am I having so much trouble keeping his name in
Ernie
my
Hudson.
Head? Ernie Hudson. And he's like, oh my God, I've got a growth. I've got cancer. And Ernie Hudson's like, that's a leech. And then he gives him a cigarette to burn it off. And it's like, how stupid do you have? I mean, yeah, seeing something on your dick's like embarrassing or upsetting, but I feel like I'd know. I might go and ask, hey, how do I get a leech off? But I would not think I had cancer. That I'd grown like a, you know, 6-inch long black thing out of my penis overnight, you know?
He's a professor who like studies gorillas, and then at some point they run into a gorilla in the wild, and Ernie Hudson's like, don't run away or I'll chase you. And he says, I've read the books. It's like, dude, you have worked with the gorilla your entire fucking career. What are you talking about? Like, yeah. You have the more hands-on experience than basically anyone in the world. Why would you say I've read the books?
Like, you literally have a doctorate in understanding gorillas, and Ernie Hudson is condescending to you about how to understand a gorilla.
I mean, also, he understands gorillas, but the entire premise of his mission didn't make sense to me, because Amy, the gorilla, seemed to have terrible nightmares to the point where they had to sedate her. And from those nightmares, she'd draw her visions, which were like jungle scenes. So they were like, let's take her back to the jungle. These nightmares.
Yeah.
It seems like that's the one place she wouldn't want to go. Because,
yeah,
right?
And they do.
She said that she wanted to go.
They do literally one line of this where they're like, I've heard of other gorillas mentally degenerating because they were in captivity too long. Which one, then maybe if that is the thing that can happen, maybe you shouldn't have, you know.
Yeah, done it in the first place.
Captivity for 30 years.
Yeah.
But two, maybe you should run a test on her to see if she is mentally degenerating before you give up this thing you've like spent your entire life doing and just release her into the jungle where she might, for all you know, get torn apart by other gorillas because she doesn't know how to be a gorilla.
I will say it makes a little bit more sense in the book how they set it up, because basically she's like not talking as much as she used to, and she's been painting. That's kind of a separate thing. She's been painting for a long time, and she's always been painting the stuff of the jungle. And so they think like maybe if she visits the jungle, it'll kind of like reinvigorate her. I don't think he ever intends to just leave her there.
That makes a lot more sense than just like, yeah, hey, gorilla.
Right. And also in the book, he's not just like flying over to like a specific spot. Laura Linney's character basically goes to him and asks for expertise on this trek that she's doing that's like supposed to be really quick, because they see a picture of a gorilla. And so they're like, let's go talk to the gorilla professor who might know of like a species that looks like this. And he's like, I'm going to go with you since you already have like a cargo plane. Amy and I will go.
That would have
so
been
I don't know. It makes a little bit more sense.
Because they could have cut out the whole talking ape arc, and Laura Linney could have been driving this expedition.
Or they got to do more with the talking ape, or you got to not have the talking ape. Having the talking ape, but having the talking ape not matter is a very strange balance.
I mean, there's just no way that they're going to cut out the talking ape. Like, that was like a big part of the marketing for this movie. So I would say that that's like the main draw of the movie. That's like, there's no way they're going to cut that. It's like cutting the T-Rex out of Jurassic Park. They just had to write more around it.
Like maybe from an advertising perspective, but the T-Rex was like, did stuff, drove the story forward.
Yes. No, I'm not arguing that point, but
yeah,
they can't cut it. They just needed to like Yeah, they needed to have her stuff matter a little bit more. Like, she, I guess she kind of helped them find the city of Zinj, but that's basically
right. She was like, let's go this way.
Right. Which was really weird that Laura Linney was like, yeah, okay, let's just follow the gorilla. Why the fuck not?
But like, Ernie Hudson, that decision doesn't actually end up mattering that much, apparently, because Ernie Hudson says that if they go the wrong way, it'll just add a day or two to their expedition. So it's not like, oh my god, she saved the expedition. It's like, oh my god, she saved us like two nights of camping.
Well, they would have lost it because the volcano exploded.
I thought the volcano exploded because of all of the shit that they did with the laser and stuff.
No, the volcano was exploding.
Oh, right. Joe Don's like, it's going to explode any day now, but I don't want you to cancel the expedition.
Which makes the whole thing just, I mean, yeah, it just feels like so pointless.
Everything
got swallowed by volcano in the end. Like,
what? Would one diamond be enough?
Yeah, exactly. Even if this all goes to plan and Jodan Baker gets his diamond, I mean, he's got like a laser, and that's good.
I think you study the diamond and recreate it in the lab.
I think that if they appear to already know what kind of diamond they're looking for, and I feel that if they knew how to create a diamond like that, they'd just do it without all this monkey nonsense.
I don't know what the plan was either.
And I guess it's good that they didn't explain it because it would have just been dumber. But
right. It's not like this movie like did a good job explaining any of the decisions that anyone makes in it. So
yeah, when it tries to explain something, it's stupid, and when it does it's baffling. It's great.
I have one terrible set of decisions at the end when these volcanoes exploding and rivers of lava are running through the evil cave's lair or the evil ape's lair. They all just start jumping into the lava. And I'm like,
they're just like, oh, our city's gone. What are we gonna do?
What are you doing? Go the other way. Like, I don't understand it all.
They thought the lava looked sweet, dude.
Yeah. The thing you have to understand about gray apes is they love shitty CGI lava. It's their favorite thing. They love swimming in it, they love looking at it. Their entire religion centers around becoming one with it by jumping into it. So these gorillas, they're going to gorilla heaven.
I also really loved how, like, right after that happened, they go out and Amy's with the other apes, and like, they're like, are they gonna be okay? And somebody, I don't remember who it is, maybe Ernie Hudson is like, oh, they know what to do better than any of us. It's us I'm worried about. And it's like, did you just see all the gorillas commit suicide into the lava? Is that what you think is the right thing? Because.
I mean, from a certain point of view, that does solve the problem of will the gorilla be fine. It's just like, no, let's move on.
He's gonna die. You know, we all die in the end. So he's gonna go out in a sweet way.
I have a low point, which is that I think they needed to really tone down the weird sexual tension that existed between Elliot and Amy, where Amy keeps requesting tickles and getting jealous of Elliot for talking to Laura Linney and stuff. Don't throw in a weird semi-bestiality subplot into your movie.
There's a lot of weird scenes in this where there's just like Elliot and Amy playing around, and like you can kind of tell that some producer watched this and was like, we need more Amy in the movie, but they only got stupid fucking shots of her and Elliot having tickle fights, so they just put that in.
Yeah. Amy appears to be about as smart as a human toddler and keep requesting tickles from a grown man. It's very, I don't know. It left a bad taste in my mouth.
I don't think that that'd be that weird, except that they have this whole thing where like Amy gets jealous of any other women around Elliot.
They keep having people comment that they're like that Elliot and Amy are like a married couple.
Yeah, where it's like, just don't do that. Don't put that part in. That's weird.
Yeah, I think that was the only weird part. Honestly, because dogs do that. They'll like get jealous and shove their head into your hand to get pets.
Look, it's not that it's weird that that would happen in real life. It's weird that that's what the movie is trying to show us. Yeah. You know, part of the relationship that the movie decides to focus on. Yeah.
Like if Amy couldn't talk, it probably wouldn't read as weird. But the fact that Amy can talk and is doing all this stuff makes it play like, I don't know. It's not like an enormous thing, but it is definitely present.
It's just a little bit weird, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, any parting shots from anyone?
Despite how much crap we talked about this, I still had a lot of fun watching this movie.
Yeah, definitely. I don't understand why this has such a toxic, critical, like, whatever.
I was expecting. Yeah, I was expecting to be a lot worse. I actually, like, just the whole adventure of it was actually kind of fun. Like, the ending was really stupid and some of the characters were annoying, but I still had a pretty good time.
Yeah, the gorillas all look uniformly sharp. It looks like it was shot on location somewhere. They threw a lot of money into it and got some pretty nice shots. Everything just looked cool. And even, like, if there's this scene where they're, like, jumping out of a plane, and apparently no one has any training on how to jump out of a plane. And they do it, and they do it over a forest, which it seems like that would be the hardest thing to jump out of a plane over. But everyone's just fine. And that's stupid. But on the other hand, it looks like they actually put a bunch of people up in a plane and had them jump out of it over a forest. So I like that, even if it was conceptually idiotic. You know, just stuff like that. 90s movies are just... I think because of the practical special effects, they just tend to be a lot more fun than, like, the garbage. A garbage 90s movie will be better than a garbage now movie, because at least the effects work will be nice.
Yeah, it makes me nostalgic for a time when, like, bad movies were still had a lot of effort put into them.
Yeah.
It feels like now bad movies are just like it's, you see some, like, giant spectacle and you're like, what the hell? Who was passionate about this? Like, this movie, somebody cared about this movie. Like, some of the shots were really cool. And clearly, like, somebody had a love of, like, the African plains / jungle.
Yeah, it's not just like nowadays when someone tries to do a big blockbuster. It's essentially just they open a hatch in a computer. Well, no, it's actually they go out to a bunch of different effects houses where the people are very underpaid. They don't really give them very much direction. And then 6 weeks before it comes out, they're like, hey, you fucked up. Redo it. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just all.
That's where all the budget went.
Yeah, it's just all, like, you know, zeros and ones and shit.
Which, you know, yeah, we've talked about CGI versus practical effects on this. Like, CGI can totally work.
But. It can, but the way it's used nowadays, it seems like it's just the default. I mean, it's not. It seems like it is the default for everything. And I really think what I want it to be is practical is the default for everything. And then you use CGI to get it, like, over the hump and make it look better. And that produces the best effects work. Whereas now, CGI, even the best CGI, it just never looks real in the way practical does, you know?
Yeah, maybe I like CGI for the fact that you can do something really crazy with it, something that looks nothing like real life. But, like, to just reproduce things that you could actually do, it just makes it look a lot worse. So I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, like, if this movie got made now, there's no way they're actually doing a real skydiving scene like this. They'd put the actors in a wind tunnel and then composite in the background, and it would look like orders of magnitude worse. Anyways, enough of old man Lawrence yells at computers. Ronald, I believe you have a game for us.
Okay, I got a game. We're gonna play another round of sitcom versus the Menace. Who wants to go first?
You should go first, man, because you didn't get to go last time.
Okay. Did either of you guys have a special one, or should I just roll?
You should just roll, dude. The randomness is what makes it fun.
All right. Okay. So I got Rachel Green from Friends versus the Predator.
Awesome.
Okay. It kind of boggles the mind, right? You initially think, well, like, obviously Rachel can survive this. She doesn't own a gun. The Predator would never attack her. But unfortunately for Rachel, she was just convinced by a friend. She wasn't really comfortable with the idea, but she was just convinced by a friend that, like, it's probably a good idea to carry a gun around when you're in New York because it's such a dangerous city. You see a lot of people. There's been shootings or something so recently. So she's decided that she carries around one in her purse. Never really thought she would use it. Unfortunately, the Predator saw it from miles out and really just zoned in on her specifically. And when it first attacked, it shot, like, two other civilians. She happened to just, like, bend over to pick something up right when the plasma blast went right over her and killed somebody behind her. And she ran back to her apartment where her roommate... Courtney Cox, what's her name in Friends? Anyone watch that show?
No.
I don't know.
I didn't know which one was Rachel, if I'm being honest.
With Jennifer Aniston.
Okay, cool. I'm amused by the fact that even when she's being stalked by the Predator, the thing that's saving her is still sitcom shtick of, like, bending over just at the right moment.
Yeah, so she's pretty horrified, and she goes back to her hotel, or to her apartment, where she lives with Courtney Cox. And tells her, and Courtney Cox says, like, obviously there's some misunderstanding, like, I don't know what you're talking about. But then she turns on the news and they see that somebody really did explode down in where Rachel was walking. And so they shut all the windows, thinking, and lock the doors, and they call over Joey and Chandler, who live right across the hall, I think. And they, you know, they explain the situation, and Chandler's like, well, what, why do you think that I would help? And Joey's just going on about how, you know, like, he was in the middle of eating a sandwich or something.
Classic Joey, I assume, having never seen Friends.
Yeah, not, I'm not a Friends expert here, but, you know, just from what I understand, he eats a lot of sandwiches. Now,
a classic comedic premise of a man who eats a lot of sandwiches. It stretches back to the days of Blondie.
They've barricaded themselves in their apartment, and they've called over Phoebe and Ross at this point, because why not have the entire gang there for protection? They tried calling the cops, but the cops thought it was a joke, just and told them, you know, don't call this number unless you have something serious to talk about. And so they've locked all their doors and their windows, but the predator can obviously see through all of this, and starts stalking around invisibly around the outside, and gets a shot off and kills Phoebe.
Fucking finally.
Instantly. Yeah. And everyone's like, wait, Phoebe? And it's just like the smoking lower half of her body.
Ronald, may I make a small pitch?
Yeah.
I want Ross to say, did I do that? Before being reminded that that's not his catchphrase.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Ross kind of gives that awkward, like, Urkel, did I do that for some reason? And everyone is like, Ross, what the hell, man? Phoebe's dead. And so then Ross starts going into about how, like, maybe this is some, you know, advanced alien from another planet, because he's a nerd and he watches sci-fi. And Chandler goes on a cocaine-fueled rant about how they're all dead, man, and we're not going to get out of here, and I'm terrified. But meanwhile, Joey has finally finished constructing his sandwich.
He was in the middle of eating a sandwich, then he got called over, then a woman died, but of course he still had to build another sandwich.
Yeah, well, he's building it in the new apartment because he was so hungry. And the Predator has seen this, and he knows that this is the most important thing, because, like, obviously Joey's been focused on this. And so the Predator steals it from Joey and eats it himself. But then as the Predator continues to hunt, he's weakening, and for some reason he falls over dead. And they investigate the body, and they're like, oh, Joey, you put this... You put this thing in the fridge that I had on your sandwich. He's like, I thought it was hot sauce. And it was some sample from his lab, because he's a scientist.
What?
I'm pretty sure. He's a professor in the biology department. And he accidentally took home a really virulent biotoxin that the Predator accidentally ate.
In my home fridge. Yeah. In a sauce bottle.
Well, he put a do not eat.
Biohazard.
But Ross, when he was knocking stuff around, accidentally knocked it off, and it got covered up the hot sauce instead. So, you know, you can see how anyone would make that mistake. So the Predator eating the sandwich not only killed himself, but also saved Joey's life. And that's how Rachel defeated the Predator.
You know what I like about this, Ronald? It kind of seems like if the Predator hadn't showed up and the episode of Friends had just proceeded as normal, multiple people still would have died. Rachel would have shot someone in a wacky mix-up, and then someone would have eaten poison.
Yeah, it would have been a pretty dark episode. I mean, as it was still pretty dark, but not as dark. She didn't kill anyone, and only Phoebe died. Arguably the least important character.
Yeah, I don't even remember. I'm unaware of her existence, so she must not matter.
She's Lisa Kudrow.
Oh, well, I like her because she was an owl on BoJack Horseman. Never mind, it doesn't matter.
She's a good actor, but least important character in Friends, probably. I don't know. I don't watch it. I've seen a few episodes.
I gotta say, your lack of knowledge of Friends really showed through. I think Professor. I don't know.
He's something. Yeah. He's something in science related. He probably has biotoxins. Yeah. All right, who's next?
Oh, yeah.
All right, Lawrence, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. You got. Okay. All right. You get. Joe Bluth from Arrested Development versus Thanos from Marvel.
Okay, now this is a fun reversal because astonishingly, I know who Joe Bluth is pretty good, but I know almost nothing about Thanos.
Do you want me to reroll Thanos?
Nah, it's fine. Let's see if I can.
No, here. Let me reroll it because that's kind of one of the rules of this. If you don't know one of the characters, at all, like you just go ahead and. Okay, actually, you got Grey Goo, which was your suggestion.
Oh shit! So this Grey Goo is of course the thing that's produced when someone builds a nanobot that reproduces, but it just keeps reproducing until the Earth is covered with gray goo. And this is kind of going to be tricky for Job to combat, because Job's two main abilities are, one, shitty magic tricks that don't really work, and two, being enormously self-centered and self-destructive in ways that annoy his brother. So let's see. I'm going to say that the gray goo was actually sort of created in the fake homes that the Bluth Construction Company made in Iraq as like kind of a cover for the CIA to do spying there. And I think that's what ended up happening in season three. I don't remember, whatever. Anyways, and they accidentally, in a series of hilarious mix-up, bring a sample of the gray goo, which has already wiped out Iraq, but it kind of just got covered up and people are like, yeah, we won the war, it's fine. But the Bluth family accidentally brings a sample of it home. And wouldn't you know it, but Buster is attempting to make some of his patented hot ham. Or no, actually, that wasn't him. What's the name of the sister? Portia Rossi is attempting to make some of her patented hot ham water. But she's actually a little unclear on what ham is. And finding this gray goo, she dumps it into the pot before a big family get-together. So, of course, the gray goo goes fucking nuts and starts eating its way out of the pot, but she's oblivious to the cooking process and assumes that this is just sort of how it goes. So she is serving it up to the rest of the family. Michael and George Michael, of course, refuse to eat it because they're like, this is not right. And also it's eating to the table and our plates and everything. But they're still consumed, of course, as is the rest of the Bluth family. And Job is fairly oblivious to all this because he has self-appointed himself that he is going to entertain their family dinner party by doing magic. So the gray goo is growing and growing and growing and spreading throughout the house and sort of moving in on Job while he's like desperately trying to make his flints work and stuff. And then he's about to turn around and do his final trick, which is the patented flame gout. So he turns around and he's, you know, doing the whole big arm movement to project the flame gout. But of course it doesn't work and instead just sprays lighter fluid on the gray goo. But in an amazing coincidence, it turns out that lighter fluid is the one thing that the gray goo cannot handle. And it dies in such a way that it releases an enormous cloud of toxic gas as the individual pieces die. Whereupon Job kind of is, you know, hitting his hands together trying to make his striker work for once and then he can cheat it. Which of course causes the gas to combust, burning down the home and destroying the gray goo. Also Job, but knowing it or not, he did actually just save North America. So he died. And every other member of the Bluth family is dead.
Nice.
Horribly.
They were all there?
Yeah. They were all there for family.
They were all there
dinner.
For dinner.
Yeah. And I guess they brought the sample back because, well, fuck, I don't know. I don't think any of them actually ever went to Iraq, so I don't know. Maybe someone shipped it over as like, what the fuck is this? Fix it or something. Whatever, it doesn't matter. If that's the problem you have at the things I just said, you're a fool, because there's a lot dumber shit than that. Anyways.
Nice.
That seemed like a realistic episode. Yep, everyone died at the
season,
end.
Season 6.
Yeah.
Season 6, the Bluths versus the nanobots.
All right, Rahul, are you ready? I got a good one for you.
I'm ready.
All right, you got Kevin McAllister from Home Alone versus the Xenomorph from Alien.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, the Xenomorph is already kind of weak to traps, so.
Yeah. All right, this is what happens. It's the Stardate 2000. Weyland-Yutani has created this new science vessel called the Nostromo. They're about to launch it. And Kevin McAllister and his friends are walking through an airport, and Kevin McAllister bumps into this large, tall man with a Trump haircut, and he loses his ticket, and he accidentally, somehow, in a mix-up, gets the Trump guy's ticket. That Trump guy was actually going to go on the Nostromo. Now, Kevin McAllister is too stupid to read, but he's really charismatic, so he ends up at the spaceport somehow, just like, where am I supposed to go? He ends up on the spaceship, he gets launched, and he's out there floating. Yeah, you know, next thing you know, the Nostromo's, I don't really remember what happened to the aliens, but it's floating through space, hanging and bocking, and he's like, maybe someone's cooking. So he pads down to the kitchen, and he's like, this is the weirdest flight I've ever been on.
So he, and, in your setup, he's been on spaceships before, but they weren't as weird as this.
He's been on airplanes.
And he looks at the, he peeks in the kitchen, the galley, I think it's called, on the spaceship. I'm not sure. And he sees something that's eating the cook. The official space cook is being eaten by a monster. So Kevin McAllister sort of like confronts it. He's like, hey, what are you doing? And the alien like turns around and it's like totally like not afraid of him. So it starts chasing him, and Kevin McAllister does what he does best. He starts running away, and he starts like throwing things behind him, like knocking over trash cans, jumping down chutes, and the thing just keeps following him. But Kevin McAllister is really clever, so he ends up in the reactor room, and the thing has followed him there. And from his years in school, he knows that if he overloads the reactor just right, maybe he can irradiate the vessel, but he can save himself by staying in a secret neutrino proof room for this exact scenario.
Yeah, that checks out. He would learn that in elementary school.
Yeah, in Chicago public schools, they've got a whole thing on how spaceships would work if there were spaceships. And then he got lucky and ended up on a spaceship.
So Kevin McAllister, he's running to the controls. He takes a brick, he throws the brick at the alien. The alien does nothing. And then Kevin McAllister, he takes a shovel that's just lying there in the reactor room, and he hits the alien with that, and that seems to stun it for a second. He runs over to the control panel. He types in the overload code, and he runs into the safe room that's in the reactor room for some reason that only the Nostromo designers know. And their vessel's irradiated, and I believe that kills the alien, but you'll really only know for sure in McAllister versus Alien 2.
Does it also kill all of the other passengers?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense, because yeah. Kevin McAllister is famously bloodthirsty.
I mean, that was part of the deal.
Yeah.
I enjoy the image of you're in a spaceship reactor, and for some reason there's just a brick and a shovel lying there. Like they're doing a little construction.
They're like shoveling coal. Like.
Yeah, no, that sounds like how that would go. I enjoy that you, instead of bringing the alien to Earth, you brought Kevin McAllister to space.
I was like, how is the alien going to get to Earth? Like, I couldn't figure it out.
So yeah,
like,
that's ridiculous. It's not like they've done it in any of the movies.
Yeah, and they also, and this is great, you had a little cameo from the current president.
Ex-president. Or
nope.
Current. Oh, yeah. God damn it. I did. I'm afraid I did. He was going to go to space and get eaten by an alien, but Kevin McAllister saved him. Fuck.
Yeah. Anyways, Jesus fucking Christ. So dumb. Also, Raul, have you ever seen Home Alone? Because based on your story, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it does seem like he has seen Home Alone quite a few times.
Yeah, I've seen
Home Alone. Or at least Home Alone 2. But it does not seem like he's seen any of the Alien movies.
But, I mean, the thing is, Kevin McAllister is mostly famous for kind of making traps and stuff and not running away or being bloodthirsty. So
in Home Alone 2, in both movies, he's pretty bloodthirsty. But in Home Alone 2, he runs away a lot more.
Fair enough.
Because he's in Lost in New York.
I've only seen Home Alone once, and I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
You're an
heretic. The shovel guy was too scary, because I saw it when I was like 5.
Could be scared now.
My wife was still convinced that he was a murderer, like, when we watched it recently. I guess, like, you know, they don't ever prove that he wasn't.
Yeah, he draws the line at killing kids, so, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows what he does to adults, though.
Well, he's like a Dexter, you know, where he, like, likes to cut up people, but he enjoys doing it to bad people.
He's a Dexter, but he only preys on Joe Pesci's. He's like, he looks at the camera and he's like, it's a great job, but I can only do it once. He's constantly trying to get Joe Pesci to fuck and name his kid Joe Pesci Jr. so he'll have someone else to kill.
So he has something to look forward to.
Anyways, let's go to recommendations and cautions.
Okay. I'll go first.
Yeah.
Okay. So I got a recommendation and a caution this week. My recommendation, I just watched this a couple days ago, the movie Nope. It's a 2022 movie directed by Jordan Peele. I did like this movie. It wasn't my favorite Jordan Peele movie, but I mean, he's only done three. But it was pretty good. And Daniel Kaluuya is always good. He has kind of a flat performance in this one, but it's maybe kind of the point of the character a bit. It's understated, which was good. I can't remember the actress of the sister, but she's a really charismatic character who stands out, and she was excellent. I hadn't seen her in anything before. And just the whole movie was a pretty interesting movie, speaking of aliens and things like that. I don't want to spoil too much of the movie, but you know, you can see in the preview that that's something like that's going on. So yeah, definitely worth a watch. Just kind of like Us, I feel like it tries a little too hard on like being I feel like it's almost a little bit too literal with like what is what the villain kind of represents. It doesn't feel super organic at times, but I still really enjoyed it, and like I like that Jordan Peele's putting out like interesting movies and not just like fodder. So go watch Nope. My caution is I recently watched a movie called Underwater, starring Kristen Stewart. Basically the premise of this movie is that there's this like really deep underwater base. I don't really even know what they're doing down there, mining stuff. I remember watching the preview and I didn't think it looked that interesting, because a lot of the preview is about how like, oh, they built this thing way underwater and like what could go wrong. We're getting shut in for 2 months. But the interesting part about this movie is that it just starts like past all that, like kind of maybe even with the assumption that you've seen the preview, like that's part of the movie, because it doesn't explain anything about like why the base is there or why they set it up. So I did kind of like the start of it, but it's just kind of boring. Like I didn't really find it very interesting. It's underwater, which, you know, I guess for some people that's like a huge fear. I've not really been around water that much, so it's not a big fear for me, but it's also just like really murky, which I thought would be good, because it's kind of like sometimes when you can't really see very well, it makes things scarier when things aren't like, you know, laid out, and that's what they were clearly going for, but it just made everything kind of look visually bad to me. And the ending of the movie was incredibly stupid. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. If that sounded interesting, feel free to check it out, obviously, but I wouldn't recommend it. So that's it for me.
I'll go next. So I've got a double recommendation, no caution. The first is I watched a movie called Resurrection, which came out 2022 this year, stars Rebecca Hall and Tim Roth. The basic plot is that Rebecca Hall is a very put together, but kind of, I guess you'd say brittle or something, you know, very controlled woman. And then she goes to a scientific conference and she sees Tim Roth and starts freaking out. And it turns out that Tim Roth is her abusive ex, and the nature of the abuse was especially not, it's pretty horrifying because all abuse is horrifying, but it's more just like very strange. And then so she starts like losing the very tight control she's had over her life, and he starts not quite threatening her, but not quite threatening her. I heard a lot of people say that the ending on this was very strange. I actually, if you come at it knowing that it's basically like Elevated / art horror, it's not that weird, although it still is unusual. If you want to see a really crazy ending, go watch Men. That thing's fucking nuts. This one, the ending flows from what happened before, even if only on a metaphorical level. I thought the performance in it were excellent, and it does a very good job of maintaining this very like sort of tense and nerve-wracking atmosphere without very many jump scares, which I quite enjoyed. And then the other thing I want to recommend is, so this movie, great big hunk of just 90s, you know, cheesy fun effects works and just like weird shit. And I watched another movie that really reminded me of that, which is Relic, which is a horror movie about just a monster that ends up in the Natural History Museum in Chicago. And for some reason, even though they're sure there's a monster, they refuse to close the museum. It's like, it has almost the same plot as Jaws did, except it makes a lot less sense to refuse to close a specific museum than it does to refuse to close the beach that keeps your community going. But still, the monster design on it is very fun. You get a good performance in it from Tom Sizemore. And I've been seeing a lot of movies to Tom Sizemore performances. And I kind of wish that guy hadn't just gone crazy and released a weird sex tape, because he's very fun to watch in movies. He's got this kind of like weird, like grungy charisma to him that I like. And it's got this like just crazy, like the CGI in it doesn't work, but they kind of know that it doesn't work. So you don't see it very much. And the practical effects on the creature are very fun. And also the explanation for what the monster is legit insane in a way that's very fun. So if you're just like, hey, I want to watch some dumb 90s shit, Relic, you'll have a blast.
How'd you watch that one?
You should.
How did you watch it?
I rented it off, or possibly bought it off Apple. It's on streaming and stuff. It's not hard to get.
Cool.
Yeah. Raul?
Okay, I have no recommends, no cautions, but I do have a plug. I'd like to plug this video I'm putting in the chat. It reminds me of Lawrence, and I think when you watch it, you'll understand why.
All right, let me just tell to the listeners that the video is called...
This is a bird, and it's just eating fish, and the way it eats fish is just amazing. It just swallows the fish, and it seems to have like an endless... ability to do so.
This is a video called A Bird That Eats a Lot of Fish.
Look, dear listener, if you have never met Lawrence, this video captures him.
Is this because I used to do that trick where I'd eat a slice of pizza in two bites?
It's a number of things.
That's a symptom of the problem.
Look, it's not my fault that everyone else is bad at eating. The point of eating is to get the food in you as quick as possible, and I'm incredible at it.
You really are. Hence the video.
It's true. The video is of a small bird eating like 8 fish. It is pretty incredible. It seems to swallow them whole.
Like,
it definitely swallows the bowl.
Like, bro, how hungry are you? Jesus, fish.
Well, I don't think fish is hungry. It's just the bird.
God damn. It's like, I don't even know how it fits him in its body.
Some of the fish look heavier than the bird.
Right? Like, certainly that amount of fish is. Like, what is the plan, man? Like,
it looks like his neck is so full he can't bend it.
It's like... It's so ridiculous.
I identify with that bird.
I don't even know, man. It's just like been starved for like a week or something. Because
the last fish, it legit. There's this weird moment before it goes for the last one where it seems to be kind of like pondering whether it's like, worth it or not to eat the fish.
I'm doing it. Anyway.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. Anyways, listener, from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna gather it. Finger in the bottle. Now fill the head.